Welcome aboard. We will be your guides during this magical journey into the movies. It's the perfect job for us because we love the movies. It's showtime. Ready when you are, CB.
Action.
Welcome to Monorail Radio, episode number 277. I'm Sean.
And I'm Jackie.
And we are here this week to review and discuss Muppets Most Wanted as it celebrates its 10th anniversary. Anybody that has been with us for a while knows how much we love and champion the Muppets, specifically the Jason Segel Muppets film. You would think that this would have been the movie we were so highly anticipating. Thursday night, midnight showing, have to be there, can't miss it. And we didn't see this for the first time until it hit, I think, Netflix. Because we saw this before Disney Plus launched, but I know a considerable amount of time had passed before we saw this for the first time.
Right, and it doesn't really make sense why, because the real irony here is that this is the only Muppets movie to be a direct continuation of its predecessor. Do you remember why we didn't go see it? Was it that we were sort of put off by the trailer? Or you know what would probably be an on-brand reason for us is because Jason Segel opted out of this one.
I think that had a lot to do with it.
If I remember correctly, I think that might have been it.
I think we saw the trailer, we knew what the plot was, and I remember thinking to myself, this feels like a sequel. You know what I'm saying? Like when you have that negative connotation to a sequel, that's what this felt like just from the jump. And I think that we just opted to sit it out and we waited until... I mean, we didn't even pay to rent it. Like, we could have gotten it for a dollar at the Redbox, and we waited until it was on a streaming service that we were already paying for.
Well, I think that that was it, too, because Jason Segel's reasoning for not wanting to be a part of this was because coming off the success of the 2011 version, which is also why I've been, like, sort of dreading having this discussion, because 10 years of Muppets Most Wanted makes me realize, like, how long ago.
Yeah.
Our beloved version came out. And it's just weird to think that like movies we saw when we first started dating are now
almost
that age.
Years old.
Yeah. It's almost like sweet 16 time for us.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Disney was pushing for the sequel. So they got everybody else back, the writer, the director. But Jason Segel was like, nope, I did what I set out to do. I brought them back. I got my revival and sort of washed his hands of it.
Yeah.
And do we blame him?
Do we blame him? Did we make the right call by waiting for this to come to streaming before seeing it for the first time? And were our fears confirmed? That, on top of many other things, is what we are here to discuss today.
This episode is sponsored by Fierce Fox Co., designers of handmade silkscreen shirts. Fierce Fox has a t-shirt, tank top, hoodie, or crew neck for every fandom. So whether it's the movies or theme parks, princesses or villains, the MCU or Star Wars, everyone will find something they love. The designs range from subtle quotes from our favorite films to iconic characters we can wear proudly in so many different styles, such as sketchbook and concert tees. Listeners of Monorail Radio can get a 20% discount using the code Monorail at checkout. Visit fiercefoxco.com to check out all of the collections.
Coming off their successful reunion, the Muppets hire Dominic Bad Guy to help manage a world tour. Meanwhile, Constantine, the world's most dangerous frog, breaks free from a Russian gulag and becomes the world's most wanted criminal, taking the spot from the mysterious lemur. Unbeknownst to the Muppets, Dominic and Constantine are associates planning to steal the British crown jewels. Dominic suggests starting the tour in Berlin, and the stress of the tour leads Kermit to snap on Piggy, suggesting that he may never marry her. Dominic convinces Kermit to go for a walk to take his mind off of things. However, this is all a setup, as Constantine slaps a false mole on Kermit's face, leading to Kermit being arrested, as they think that he, in fact, is Constantine. Constantine hands all control of the Muppets to Dominic and fools everyone except Walter into buying into the lie. During their show at the Berlin Theater, Constantine and Dominic steal paintings from a museum, and Dominic leaves behind the calling card of the lemur. Following the heist, Sam Eagle and Interpol agent Jean-Pierre Napoleon begin to investigate the crime. We see that the stolen artwork has hidden messages on the back instructing them on where to find the jewels. Kermit, meanwhile, is thrown into a Russian gulag where he and his fellow prisoners see that he is not Constantine. Constantine, meanwhile, convinces Piggy that he can give her whatever she wants, as well as the other Muppets, who learn that they can perform whatever skits they want with no real structure to the show. During the show, Constantine and Dominic smash busts in a museum until they find a key that they need for their next theft. While the reviews of the show are positive, Walter knows that the show wasn't all that good, but they leave for Dublin for their next performance. In Madrid, Napoleon and Sam are seeing a trend where the Muppets are always at the site of the heists, so they apprehend them. After questioning them, however, they rule them out as suspects. Kermit tries and fails to escape the gulag and is shown an article from Nadia, a prison guard, that shows that Dominic is taking credit for the Muppets' recent success and forces him to help her with the prison review show. In Dublin, Walter follows Dominic and sees that not only are the tickets for the shows being given away to fill the houses, but he is also bribing journalists to write positive reviews. Walter tells Fozzie what is happening and they confront Constantine. They, along with Animal, jump into a freight train to escape and find the real Kermit. In the gulag, the show is coming along and we see that Nadia has a shrine to Kermit and never intends on letting him go. When the Muppets learn that Fozzie and Walter are gone, they question if they should continue the tour, but Dominic and Constantine convince them to. During their performance, Dominic steals the locket of Colonel Blood. Constantine proposes to Piggy on stage and announces that the wedding will be held 2 days later at the Tower of London. Napoleon and Sam realize that the jewels are being held at the tower and that they are the target of the next crime. Constantine then tells the Muppets that he is leaving them after the wedding, and Piggy starts to question the marriage. Let me just clarify, this entire time they think they're talking to Kermit. I thought that I was pretty clear about that, but I just want to throw that out there again. They think they're talking to Kermit this entire time. At the Gulag review show, Animal, Walter, and Fozzie arrive to save Kermit and tell him that Constantine replaced him, upsetting Kermit. During the show, they escape and go to London, where they are going to stop the wedding from happening. Kermit overhears Constantine and Dominic discuss their plans to steal the jewels and that Piggy faces a grim fate after. Kermit interrupts the ceremony and exposes that Constantine replaced him. Constantine attempts to detonate a bomb hidden in Piggy's ring, but is stopped thanks to an anti-bomb device invented by Bunsen and Beaker. Dominic exposes that he is the lemur as Constantine takes Piggy hostage in a helicopter. Kermit boards and works with Piggy to stop Constantine. Sam and Napoleon arrest Dominic and Constantine. Nadia arrives to arrest Kermit for his role in the prison break, but eventually pardons him. The Muppets then conclude their world tour at the Russian Gulag.
You know, I don't think that you needed to clarify that the Muppets thought that Constantine was Kermit the entire time, because unlike this film, I can safely assume that our audience is smart enough to figure that out.
This is the biggest problem. I am glad that you're batting leadoff with this. It's the biggest problem with the movie. Go ahead. I'm taking the restrictor plate off.
No, that's it. I mean, I didn't really want to put the cart before the horse, but that is the biggest problem with it. It dumbs the Muppets down. It especially dumbs Piggy down, which we're going to talk about in depth. And I think it dumbs the audience down, quite frankly. But I think that you and I are in the minority here, because, full disclosure, we really didn't like this the first time that we saw it. This is not something that I've been... It wasn't something that I've been looking forward to watching again, but it is something that I've been looking forward to discussing to hopefully find a little bit more of the good buried in here. But I remember being so put off by it on our first viewing. And I think that we have an unpopular opinion because people seem to love this movie. It's rated very high on Google, very high on IMDb out of 5 stars. Letterboxd, not so much. It's about 50-50 split. And Rotten Tomatoes, same as Letterboxd. It's very split. But people love Constantine. The Muppets actually just put, it was actually very clever. One of the few smart things they've ever done with this type of humor is they had a Q&A with Constantine, which I will share on our Facebook. So the Muppet social media is answering as Constantine. It's actually very funny, but it's about as far as I go with it. It shouldn't be funny 10 years later. It should be funny here.
He never loses the Russian accent at any point. It's just a Russian accent that tries to sound like Kermit the Frog. Like, if you met Kermit the Frog in Times Square, this is what he would sound like. When he wants his $20 for picture, yay! That's it. That's the whole movie. The fact that none of them, including Walter, who put the band back together, the super fan, even he didn't see it. He saw something was off. He knew the show wasn't good. How do none of them see this?
Well, Animal smelled it, and Piggy sort of realizes that something's off, but there's a lot more to unpack there. I mean, I kind of think that they did that so that there's a clear distinction for kids, because they both have moles. But honestly, I think that's insulting to children's intelligence, because they did enough to vary Constantine from Kermit visually, where you know the difference. Yeah. Mole aside, the eyes are more angled in. Yes. So that he looks angry, and I believe the collar is a little bit smaller than Kermit's. So they do enough where we can tell the difference, where we didn't need this ridiculous accent. But anyway.
We also know that Kermit's in a Russian gulag.
Right.
We know that he's not there.
Right, exactly. We're getting way ahead of ourselves. Let's go back to the beginning, because I actually think the setup is where... I know, you want to just skip through it? Well, no, I do want to talk about the beginning, because I think a lot of the setup is where they got everything right. And then, yes, and then it collapses.
I will agree with that.
I love how it picks up immediately where the Muppets left off. I mean, the fact that they even got stand-ins for Jason Segel and Amy Adams, and, you know, they do what the Muppets do, right? They're breaking down a show and we get to see it. So I thought that that was really clever. And I like that, you know, we start back on top with them. We get this little behind the scenes tour and a dance number, which we are going to talk about the music later. And then it sort of falls apart.
I'm okay with a world tour. I think that that makes sense. That their next course of action is to take the show literally on the road. I think that that works as a setup that the Muppets would buy into. And I think that for what they're obviously trying to do, them being Dominic and Constantine, it works that... You know, he's a sham. He's not really a manager, but he's got them convinced that he is. It makes sense that he's going to intentionally put the tour in the spots they need to rob to continue getting clues to get to what they want. I mean, like, at the end of the day, like, there's a lot of national treasure that's kind of happening here, but not in a way that's appeal. You know, you're not supposed to feel good for them, but, like, a lot of the setup makes sense. It's the execution after the fact that's problematic.
It does. I do like the idea that all of these venues are masking the heist. I thought that that was really clever. And to your point, I'll buy that. Okay, what's next? We put the band back together. We put on a show. We raised money. We got the studio back. But because this is a direct continuation, I don't like that we lost the Hollywood of it all. I'm not saying that we had to stay in Los Angeles, because I think that that would have felt a lot of lather, rinse, repeat, especially because we saw, you know, the oil baron try and buy the studio out and sweet, sweet oil. See?
Yeah.
Like that would have felt like a retread. But I wish that we had at least kept it on U.S. soil. And to your point, it does feel like National Treasure, but I wish we would have kept it more, you know, in our big cities. And that way it would have felt still connected to Hollywood and what they just fought to save, because the whole thing is the studio. I would have liked a little bit more cutting back and forth between, you know, maybe half the gang is traveling, half of it is holding it down on the home front at the studio. I just hate that we lost that thread.
Well, there's two things here. First, I think they were trying to get international box office by putting them in other countries.
I'll give you that one.
But also, they did the sequel thing. We're going to go global.
Yeah.
Can't just do one place. We're going to go to a different place. And we're going to do the same thing again. It works, like, in Rush Hour with Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan, because those movies are actually funny and well-made and, like, well-produced. And they're just different enough where it's a sequel, but it's a popcorn flick. This feels like a sequel that's trying to outdo the first, and that's the difference between a movie like Rush Hour 2, where you expect it, and a movie like Muppets Most Wanted, where you go, oh, here we go. Rush Hour 2 is not trying to outdo Rush Hour. It's just doing more Rush Hour. This feels like it's trying to be bigger.
Yes, and with that, I sort of wish they had done this as a standalone, because I think I would appreciate it more if they didn't try to tie it so closely to the previous one, because what was the point? You don't continue the studio storyline at all. The only real continuation is having Walter as a part of the Muppets. And we saw his origin story. So of all the things that we're going to be asked to suspend our disbelief for, we don't necessarily need to know where Walter came from if they had just done this as its own isolated story.
Right.
So if the whole point of considering this a sequel was just so you could use that opening scene, you didn't need it. You could have just cut the whole thing out and started elsewhere. Started with a musical number in the gulag or something. All of that I can overlook because it's not the most egregious thing that this film does for me. The worst thing is our introduction to Constantine.
Yep, I knew it.
And resorting to CGI. It ruins everything about the Muppets. And quite frankly, Brian Henson should be ashamed of himself for allowing this to happen.
Yeah, I remember when we saw it the first time, I thought it was startling because they have him breaking out of the jail, basically doing kung fu, karate kicking.
Yeah.
It's not only does it look awful, but it doesn't look like the Muppets.
Right. And I mean, I get that it's not really Kermit, but to see something that so closely resembles Kermit doing this, when Jim Henson figured out a way to make Kermit ride a bike.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, unacceptable.
I completely agree. So, out of the gate, the character that you're going to get the most screen time with, you already have a negative connotation with.
Yes.
Which is a shame because when you put him and Ricky Gervais together, I actually do think that the chemistry works. Like, I buy this relationship.
I do too.
I like Dominic. I like his introduction. I do think that the setup for the most part is very good. And it's just that every time you look at Constantine, I don't know, it's because you just get started with, you're started off with a sour taste in your mouth, and I don't think you ever really shake it.
I agree. Yeah. No, it's you don't really bounce back from it.
Correct. I think that it's out of character for Kermit even is stressed out. We've seen Kermit get stressed. We've seen Kermit snap on the other Muppets. We've seen him apologize.
Yep.
But we've never, ever
yep.
seen him ever tell Piggy, I'm never going to marry you, out of frustration.
You just, oh, get out of my head, man. That's the thing, right? He's never been able to commit, but it's always turned him into a bumbling fool because yes. he doesn't know what to say. He's never been straight up mean. The other thing is that there's this confusion over their engagement. She thinks they are, he thinks they're not. It's consistent with him being non-committal to her, but this is the first instance where Piggy gets straight up dumbed down, because there's no way, for as much as Kermit's like, oh, well, oh, you know, and he yeah. stammers over it. The relationship has always sort of been clearly defined. Like, they're together and they're just going to be in this state. It's almost like Mickey and Mickey, right? Or Minnie and Mickey. Yeah. We've never really seen them get married. There have been spinoffs where they've had kids, but it's just always like they're an entity, and that's fine. And we don't need to define it. We as the audience don't need to see it defined. So to hear them not even like having a squabble over it, yeah. a straight up argument. This is, you're doing too much.
So after that, Dominic convinces him, go outside, go for the walk. Constantine is there with the hood pulled over his head, which at this point has just become a meme.
In Plot Point Berg.
Yes.
That I thought was funny, but it's also disappointing because it's one of the very few Muppety devices that we get.
Correct.
They do those visual things all the time. And besides Plot Point Berg and Dominic Bad Guy, you get nothing.
Slaps the mole on his face. Off he goes. People start calling out that it's Constantine because the wanted posters are there. I'm fine with all of that because you have to get Kermit out of the picture and you need them to start initiating their plan. But from that point moving forward, the movie falls on its face, because at no point does Dominic or does Constantine ever truly get the voice down. I know we've said that. This is the last I'm going to mention of it because I'd like to move off of this topic. But when you have him sitting there practicing and practicing and practicing, and you have Dominic telling him you have to act like Kermit, they have to believe it. The fact that not only does he never nail it, but he's not even getting a lot of the inflections or even the words right. Yeah. Like, he never gets any of it right. And they never question it. And the problem is, you spend the rest of the movie watching them get duped.
I think that's it. I mean, it's done intentionally for the audience so that we can make the distinction, right? But it's just hard to watch the wool being pulled over the Muppets' eyes. Speaking of hard to watch, this first show in Germany, it's brutal. Because to your point, not only is he not nailing the inflections in the voice, but he eats the show open.
Yeah.
You know, the show open that is usually what we build to in each movie or show. And it's sort of like, you know, the punctuation mark on the last act. And you see all your favorite Muppets come together and do the open. And they do here. But then you have Kermit introduce it. He doesn't know the lines, which is supposed to be funny. It's not. Scooter has to come and bail him out. And then a lifeless Kermit just flops onto the stage. That is a tough watch. And then not only is it rough figuratively, it's rough technically, because Sweetums drags Kermit off of the stage and then boom, he's in the next scene with Christoph Waltz, which, as funny as that is, Muppet show aside, you don't have enough time to do a costume change like that.
I thought the Christoph Waltz doing the waltz with Sweetums, it's hysterical.
That is funny. That's one of the highlights.
But yes, to your point, not enough time has gone by.
Christoph Waltz was actually supposed to be Napoleon. And the reason he got relegated to a cameo was because of a scheduling conflict. So this was the most that he could do. And that's why Ty Burrell got it, which, as much as I love Christoph Waltz, I don't know that I could see anyone but Ty Burrell doing this, because this is the most humor out of this movie comes from Napoleon and the Napoleonic complex that this detective has.
Yeah. Because they have their first heist, they steal the artwork that ends up being a good payoff later on.
Yes.
I think that they should have held Dominic as the lemur. They shouldn't have put it in this early.
Yeah, because by the end, the thread sort of disappears and you do forget about it, kind of. But if you had forgotten about it altogether and then cut to him in this ridiculous costume, I feel like it would have been a lot more impactful and it would have packed a punch as far as the comedy goes.
Yeah. But I agree with you. I think the best comedy of the film does come from Ty Burrell as Napoleon. And I think putting him with Sam Eagle is incredible.
Yes, but I think there could have been a better combination. I would have loved to see him against Deadly.
That could have been fun. Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
I mean, Sam Eagle does it too. But you have to put Interpol with the CIA, with the most American thing. Like, that's the thing. Like, This is the frustrating thing. Where they are choosing to pair the stars with their respective Muppets, for the most part,
well done.
Is very well done. Let's talk about the gulag.
Before I do want to hit on something that you said, though, because Sam Eagle was completely lost on me. So that's a really great observation. But I think this is also where they wrote themselves into a corner by calling this a direct sequel, because in the first one, Deadly was the bad guy. Deadly was the maniacal laugh. So I think that that's also another reason you weren't going to put him as one of the bigger pairings.
Right.
But yeah, to your point, Sam Eagle is perfect. The gulag.
Let's talk about the gulag.
I really think that this is why they took it international, just so they could have people saying gulag. Because again, we're insulting kids' intelligence.
They say that word a lot.
I really think that's it. That's like Nickelodeon humor 101, is pick a funny word and then just keep repeating it. And like, the kids that are watching the Muppets, like, they're smarter than that. Come on.
I think that the cameos they get in the gulag are great.
Incredible.
I think they're all very funny. Like, I don't mind being inside the gulag and how at the end of it, Nadia treats it like they're in the Waltons. Like, I think that there's a lot of comedy that's there. I wish this shrine of Kermit that Nadia has, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I wish we would have planted it a little bit early on, because at one point, after Nadia has her song, which we'll talk about in a, you know, shortly when we go over the music, she literally tells him, "You're Kermit, but in the eyes of the authorities, you're Constantine and you're not going anywhere." And I look at it and I go, but why? Why are you willing to just let the world's most dangerous frog and the most wanted individual on the planet go out there and live his life for free? And you're going to hold Kermit the Frog just because you need a patsy? Like, it didn't make sense.
It would have lent to her wanting to keep him captive because she wants him to herself.
And
if they put it up front.
And
yeah.
She needs to be another bad guy. That's the problem.
Not a bad guy, but an antagonist, because she wants to keep him there. She's got her own selfish reasons for doing it.
No, she's a bad guy. She's holding Kermit the Frog against his will, innocently, in a Russian gulag because she's in love with him. Yeah, no, I think that's a bad guy. I think that's the definition of a bad guy.
But I mean, not really. She's an antagonist because she does have a soft spot for him. So she kind of does let him, you know, and that's where the comedy does come from a little bit, is every attempt he makes to escape, she's right there. It's because she does not want to let him go. She doesn't care about her job. She doesn't care about her role. She doesn't care about Constantine. She does not want to let him go because she's obsessed.
But here's the weird thing about the obsession. And I guess we're just going to talk about it now, and then we'll go back to where we were. Is it a romantic thing? It almost seems like it is, but they don't ever take it there.
I think it's sort of like that fangirl idol worship. You know, like you love a boy band, you know?
Yeah, it wasn't very clearly defined. The way that some of the frames with hearts on them, and she's like caressing pictures in the shrine, and she's like lovingly gazing into the shrine. By the way, this shrine, we see it for about 10 seconds and we never see it again. So there's something undefined here, and I can't really get on board with it.
They should have. See, here's the thing. I feel like this ongoing cutting back and forth to the gulag gets old. I feel like it would have been more funny if we had spent less time there. I realize that you have to give our Kermit screen time, and you do have all of these wonderful cameos, but I feel like it would have been more funny if we had only seen it once or twice, instead of giving them an entire storyline where they're gonna, well, I mean, that's the whole thing, right? It's what Kermit does. He's going to put on a show no matter where he is. So you do sort of need to give him that. But I feel like maybe a few less scenes in the gulag, just like one or two at most, would have been more effective. But it's tough, though, because then you lose the Kermit thread, and you can't have his first scene where he's trapped there and then them show up to be the escape. So I guess you did need to pepper it in. But I think that's it. You're giving everyone else in the gulag too much of a storyline. And I think that's also where something feels like it's off, because you're not spending enough time with Nadia and her own personal motivation for wanting to keep him there. But I will buy it, though, because you know who she is with the shrine? She's Helga Pataki in Hey Arnold. She has the shrine, but she bullies Arnold because she doesn't know how to show that she actually cares about him. This is sort of the same thing. It's, I love you and I want you close. But it gets lost.
It gets lost. The back and forth with the gulag gets old. The other thing that gets old kind of fast is the second in command. The joke between Constantine and Dominic, where he keeps calling him number two. It's funny in Austin Powers when you have a character literally named number two because he is the number two.
Yeah.
In this case, Constantine is saying it to insult him. And that's all well and good, but like twice. You don't need more than that. Twice, and that's his motivation for being the lemur. The fact that they keep going back to it over and over and over again. You take something that's funny the first time, it's a little less funny the second time. By the 15th time, it is now no longer funny.
And instead, you're focusing so much on these, you know, comedic beats, for lack of a better word. There is a storyline that's really getting lost here. And again, you bothered to make this a sequel, so let's revert back to some of the source material here. You know, Walter has always been the biggest champion of the Muppets.
Yeah.
That is consistent because he does know that something is off and he is still sort of trying to rally everyone to put on a good show.
Right.
But this rescue attempt should have happened sooner. That's where you could have also had more comedy, is instead of just cutting back and forth from show to the gulag, you could have had this other arc where Walter, Animal, and Fozzie are off on their own and they're the ones getting tripped up on the way to save Kermit. And yes, you could have gotten a lot of, I mean, hello, you've got Fozzie with you.
Right.
That's going to write itself. They eventually do call it out that Walter should have known, and they should have realized that it wasn't Kermit. But it's too little too late, and Walter should have been the bridge between both movies the entire time, and they didn't utilize him at all.
Agreed. They wait until way too deep into the movie when he is the one that starts calling out, hey, the show's not really that good. Hey, guys, don't we have to rehearse? Like, that to them is where the payoff is for Walter. And I think, to your point, there was a lot of missed opportunity there.
I do like that he sort of assumes that Kermit role in his absence, though, because that really does drive home him understanding something is off.
Yes. And I do like that every time we go to a different country, they change the intro to the show. They change the style of music for the intro. Like, I think that that works. They change the costumes because they're trying so hard to connect with the city that they're in.
Yeah, and the Madrid show is probably my favorite. I think they did that really well. That's where you get to see, I feel like, more of a traditional Muppet show. Like, that felt like you're watching an actual episode of the television show.
Right, yeah. And again, I think it works that they're pulling off these heists, like, literally right next door. I mean, this is the thing, right? They're, like, right next door to the theater. There's always a museum. And they're always blowing through a wall, and they're using the chaos of the show to hide the explosions. Like, it was cool the first time, but I think it's just kind of lazy and convenient as it keeps happening over and over again.
It was cool when they did it in I Love Lucy, and they used Ricky singing to file down the prison bars. Been there, done that. But where they do tie it all together nicely is that that is the parallel to them breaking out Kermit, because now in the gulag, they're putting on the show and Kermit is using all of the noise to create a diversion for his own breakout.
Yeah. I think when Walter realizes what's happening, is obviously, as I said before, he has told them the show's not all that good. He can't understand why they're getting good reviews. I like that he's the one that sees that the critics are getting bribed. I think bribing the critics and giving the tickets away for free to fill the house, and it's all fake. Like, the whole thing is fake.
And I love that they call that out, because Fozzie says, why didn't we think of that?
Yeah, it was very funny. I'm glad for Walter that he was the one that saw it. I think it makes sense that he's the one that sees it, because as much as we love Fozzie, that's Fozzie's response. Fozzie's not going to think, oh, I got to go tell the gang because something's up, something's wrong. Now, as happy as I am for him, and as useful as that is for him, putting Sam and Jean-Pierre in Dublin serves no purpose. You put them there because they are tracking what is happening. They see the trend that every time a crime is committed, the Muppets are there on the same night in the theater next door.
So they're trying to get ahead of it.
And they go to the show and don't get ahead of it. So what was the point of putting them there?
Well, I mean, I think that's his whole character, right? He's like the worst detective in the world.
Clearly.
But it's not like Pirates of the Caribbean, the worst pirate you've ever seen, right? Where he eventually redeems himself. He just kind of continues to fail up.
Yeah. Let's talk about something else that is a point of confusion with me. Kermit finds out, once Walter and Animal and Fozzie get to the gulag, he finds out he's been replaced by Constantine, and he gets very upset that he was replaced by Constantine. Did he not know he was replaced by Constantine, or that he had been replaced at all, when Nadia showed him the article about the success of the Muppets without him on the road and how they didn't need him anymore?
Well, I kind of feel like, and I'm actually glad that you bring that up, because I feel like this is sort of one of the deeper moments that is sort of overlooked, because Kermit does make all of these attempts to break out. And then he stops. And it's sort of, if you can't beat him, join him. And that's why he consents to putting on the show in the gulag. He's sort of given up.
Yeah.
This is what he knows how to do. It's what he's good at. He can do it in literally any environment. So he figures, may as well put on the show. If they don't need me, he's going to do what he knows how to do.
Correct.
But I feel like, you know, again, it does go pretty deep as far as his character, and that gets completely glossed over.
Yeah. I do like the escape. I like the working in a coal mine, and that's how they use that. That's the jumping off point, literally and figuratively, to get them out of the gulag. I thought that that was funny. I thought that that was that Muppety humor, kind of highbrow, very clever.
Yes.
All so that we can get him to London and rush through the end of the movie. Is it just me, or does this movie just feel like they rushed through the end?
Oh, and see, I think the wedding drags. Interesting. Well, so you do get the showdown between Kermit and Constantine, another place where they ripped off Isle of Lucy, where they're both in the mirror, which Lucille Ball did with Harpo Marx. And they're literally mirroring each other because there's no glass in between them.
Right.
And obviously Kermit doesn't want everyone to know that he has escaped and that he's back. But Constantine does sort of sense that something is off. So then they get to the wedding. Probably one of my favorite cameos, Usher as an usher.
Yeah.
He's a darn good sport for this because it's so on the nose, but it's hilarious nonetheless. And one of few, again, Muppety humor bits that we get. But this is where the pacing is just off for me, you know. And again, they're dumbing the Muppets down because you're literally doing a one-for-one switch where those who know what's really going on, that there's Kermit and a Kermit lookalike, Animal Fozzie and Walter, they're trying to get Kermit up to the altar. And now you've got a whole another storyline that's been completely lost. Are they rooting for Kermit and Piggy? Do they want them to get together? Are they trying to do what they think is in Kermit and Piggy's best interest by having this wedding go off? So that's one thing that I think gets lost for the supporting Muppets. But then you completely lose Piggy's arc here, because the entire time she has sensed that something is off with Kermit. And for as bad as Constantine is, we haven't really talked about this because it is a lot of it comes from the musical number. But I do think that he does really sort of have an affection for Piggy, and he does genuinely want to give her everything that she wants. What just would have been nice was if it was more clearly defined, if Constantine truly loved her, so that she could, so that it would help her figure out what she wants from Kermit. Because I feel like it would have been so much more interesting if Piggy, after their argument and after their fallout, sort of quote unquote fell in love with Kermit all over again. But it's not really Kermit. She's falling in love with the person who is ready to commit to her, because he never has wanted to do that. And it would have been really interesting for her to go, huh, I fell in love with the bad guy, but he was good to me. He's giving me everything that I'm not getting out of my relationship, and have her have this huge moment of realization. And it would have been, you know, it would have given this movie so much more depth. And they toe that line, but they never fully go there because it's not defined.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have much else to add at this point about the end of the movie. I don't know if you have anything else, or if you're ready to start moving on to cast.
Actually, I think we should do music first before we do cast, because I feel like a lot more plot comes from the songs.
All right, yeah. So let's start with the first song on the soundtrack. We're doing a sequel. This is the perfect Muppet song.
It is.
I think that it's hysterical. I love that they call out that the sequels are never quite as good and then went and made a sequel that's not quite as good. I love that they said, we're a viable franchise while Tom Hanks is making Toy Story 4.
Ooh, like, shots fired.
Shots fired. And you know what, though? Shots fired, target acquired, and completely accurate.
Yes. And they're still going to do more of them. Mm-hmm. I love this song. It's catchy as all get out. I love the behind the scenes element that we're going through the studio tour. I mean, you know, if you've been with the show a long time, you know that that's just absolute catnip for me. And I love any time we get to see a soundstage and they pull back that Hollywood curtain and incredible cameos. I love that we get Lady Gaga and Tony Bennett here.
Yeah. I'm Number One is the next song.
I gotta tell ya.
Yeah.
I was very impressed with Ricky Gervais. Yeah. I didn't know he could sing. I thought he handled himself really well. I love the ragtimey feel of this song. I thought it was great.
I thought it was really good. I thought they gave him the best lyrics in the song. I thought he was outstanding.
Yeah, no, it's good. And it just works as a great villain number. The only bad thing about it is you get more of that terrible CGI with Constantine doing flip-flops. But other than that, like for the musical number, I feel like it's more easy to forgive than the prison breakout.
Yeah.
They should have never done it, but it doesn't stand out as much here. And you're also utilizing that really great set with the, the escape ladders and stuff. It's just really well done overall.
The Big House. This is a song sung by Tina Fey.
And Josh Groban,
apparently. And Josh Groban.
I love... See, that's where the gulag is worth it, because you've got the running bit of him being locked in the hole.
Yeah.
It's Josh Groban.
I mean, I thought... In all, I thought the song was funny. I thought the lyrics were funny. I thought Tina Fey was really good, actually.
She's always great. I mean, she can legit sing. Anytime they ever had to do a musical number on Saturday Night Live during her tenure there, it was default to Tina Fey.
Yeah. And I thought it worked. I thought it worked for the character. I thought it worked for the setting. I thought it was just all in all very funny. I'll Get You What You Want. This is very interesting because when we did the Billboard list, which was wrong, about the top 100 songs in the history of the Walt Disney Company, this song made the list. I still don't know why it's there.
Well,
like, it's fun, but...
This is what I was talking about earlier, where we're clearly missing something, because of the things that people love about this movie, this is, like, one of the biggest that gets talked about. I mean, catchy song, sure, whatever, it works, but this is where I needed it to do more for the characters, because... All that it successfully does is dumb Piggy down even more, because she's never been so easily led. And this is where I feel like it would have been so much more effective if we had her fall in love with Constantine, because she thinks she's getting a version of Kermit, or this is the version of Kermit that she wants. And it makes her realize this is not the one that she's got.
Agreed. The interrogation song. To me, this is the better song.
Yes.
It's so... Ty Burrell shines in this performance.
This is like it, love it, want more of it. I wish it had gone on longer. The humor is great. And just tonally, I love the song. Like, it reminded me of... This is probably not going to be a reference that you'll get, Sean. But
probably not.
Maybe some of our audience will. It reminded me of Eminem and Dr. Dre. These voices. I love the back and forth. And then it also, when it picks up, it reminded me a lot of Hamilton. But in a good way, not where I felt that it was ripped off. This, I thought the whole thing was just really well done.
Something So Right. I mean, it's Celine Dion and Miss Piggy.
I completely forgot about this. I am embarrassed to admit it. But... Arguably the biggest cameo of the film, and I completely forgot that they got Celine. I mean, this was probably a better reveal, as much as I love the moment, when Jim Parsons steps in Man or a Muppet.
Oh, no. It's not even close. Jim Parsons' reveal is so much better.
Well, it is because he's Walter in human form, and that portrayal just like was completely unexpected and so perfect. But if you're talking about star power, it's on the level.
Yeah. The song's fun. I think I like the cameo more than I like the actual song.
I will absolutely give you that because this is not an Oscar-worthy song. I don't think it even got nominated, but it pales in comparison in every other aspect to Man or a Muppet. I think overall, though, there were more musical numbers in this one, but the music is better in The Muppets.
I would agree with that. Let's move on and talk about cast here. We've talked about the Muppet performers in a few different films, so I really just want to focus on our three leads in this film, starting with Ricky Gervais, who plays Dominic Bad Guy. It's so funny because I'm used to seeing Ricky Gervais either host the Golden Globes or do stand-up comedy. Like, we know that he can act. To see him in this kind of role is so unique, but as I stated earlier, I think it works, and I love the relationship that he has with Constantine.
I couldn't agree more. I don't think at the time casting him was so controversial, but now 10 years later, I don't know that he would have gotten this role because of the way that he's been very outspoken about politics and the way that, you know, a lot of these award shows don't want him hosting anymore because they know that he's going to hold nothing back. I love that about him, but I don't think that Disney would have rolled the dice on this casting choice now. But I think he's great here.
Yeah, and just to be clear, everybody except those in the audience in the theater want Ricky Gervais to be hosting these award shows.
Well, he did. The real irony is that he's not hosting the Golden Globes anymore, but this year he won. They added the category of Best Stand-Up Special,
yeah.
And he won, but wasn't there to accept the award. And could you blame him?
Yeah.
No.
No. Tina Fey plays Nadia. I thought Tina Fey was funny. I thought her accent was good. She was funny because she's funny all the time. But there's, as I stated earlier, there's just something that seems unresolved about this character.
That doesn't bother me so much. I mean, I'm a longtime Tina Fey fan. You know, obviously we've talked about in the show how much we love SNL. We've watched, you know, for years. But I'm also just a fan of everything that she's been able to achieve with her career after that, with 30 Rock, and, you know, she's a published author and Mean Girls, and, you know, I think that she's incredibly talented, and she's obviously business savvy to have that staying power and to have such an accomplished career. Is this my favorite role of hers? No. But go read Bossy Pants, because it's great.
Ty Burrell as Napoleon.
Perfection.
He is a scene stealer in most things that he's in. Frankly, I think he's probably the best character in this movie.
I would agree. That's the thing. As much as I love the cast and their body of work on their own, I feel like this isn't necessarily the best representation, except for Ty Burrell. These are very much... They're being character actors in
yeah.
this film. And I feel like we've all seen them do it better than what's being showcased here.
This almost comes off more cartoony, right? Like, there's something about, like, it's almost intentionally overacted.
Right. And you know that they can handle it because
yeah.
they've all done it before, whether it's in stand-up, whether it's in sketch comedy. You know, they're all able to pull it off, but I feel like there have just been better roles for all of them.
Well, I think that that's kind of a good way to wrap up this review. I mean, I'll go first. I don't see where this is such a beloved Muppet film. Frankly, at its best, I think it's middle of the road. This is very much the zany, sequel that the trailer depicted. I think that this is a case where the parts are better than the sum. When you break things down individually, they do a lot of good here. But if you put them all together, the movie feels a little all over the place. and it's not, I mean, it's not one I'm going to go back and revisit.
That's really a great way to put it, because I feel like as we're sitting here talking about it, we found a lot more things to like about it, and we sound like we like it more than we actually do, because overall, it just doesn't feel like a Muppets movie to me. And I think that the biggest reason is because this, it's got all of the Muppets, but none of the heart. You're missing. And I think that that comes from the way that they handled Kermit and Piggy. You're missing that theme of friendship and love that you usually get from the Muppets. I mean, they managed to even do that and pull it off in Muppets Mayhem. You know, there was just a lot more heartfelt moments in that series. And like, okay, to be fair, it's 10 episodes. You should have those moments sprinkled over 10 episodes. But for a Muppets movie, I feel like there's usually a little bit more of a deeper lesson that you take away from it. And there was absolutely none of that here.
Yeah, but we are interested in knowing what you have to say about Muppets Most Wanted. You can join the conversation on social media at Monoreal Radio on all major platforms, or send us an email, monorealradio@gmail.com. News of the Week is coming up, but first, a quick break.
News of the Week is proudly sponsored by KMV Travel. KMV Travel is a boutique travel agency that helps families plan personalized vacations and create unforgettable memories in the most magical place on Earth. Planning for a Disney vacation can be stressful, but it doesn't need to be when you're working with a KMV travel specialist who will work with you to customize the perfect vacation for you and your family. Your KMV travel advisor will help you determine what parks to visit on each day, ensure you know the ins and outs of essential tools like My Disney Experience and Genie Plus apps, assist with dining reservations, and of course, share their favorite hacks so you get the most out of your vacation. Visit kmvtravel.com to start making magic now.
When we were planning our first family trip to Disney World, Jackie was the first person that we thought of.
Jackie helped us with every step of the planning, and she helped us pick the right hotel for our itinerary and our budget.
She also gave us great recommendations when it came to scheduling our parks, our dining reservations, and the attractions.
These days, it feels like there's a lot that goes into planning a Disney trip, and there's a lot that we just didn't know about Disney World, and we're just so thankful for Jackie's advice in making it all a little bit easier.
Yeah, when we got to the property, we realized we wanted to add on another park day, so we texted Jackie early in the morning, and she got back to us right away, and that really helped us make it happen.
We had some amazing meals and drinks. We went to Cinderella's Royal Table. We went to Oga's Cantina. We rode Rise of the Resistance without waiting on a long line. And on Jackie's recommendation, we saw the Epcot fireworks from the Skyliner.
This was an unforgettable family trip to Disney World, and Jackie made it happen.
Thank you, Jackie.
We got our first trailer for The Acolyte, which is the new Star Wars series that is heading to Disney Plus. It's going to be a 2-episode drop on June the 4th. Interesting that they're not doing it on May the 5th, but, you know, okay, we're going with June the 4th. We saw a poster a couple of days ago that had blood coming out of a, you know, the handle of a lightsaber, so that piqued a lot of interest. I thought that this trailer looks really good. I think that I've said it nauseam that we need to dial back on the Star Wars. I think that's true of film, but I think that Star Wars does work in episodic television, and I'm very interested to see where this goes.
Yeah, the poster was really intriguing. I'm not up on my Star Wars as much as most. Do you recall, was this announced or did they just do a surprise drop with this? Because I don't remember anything being announced for this.
If I'm being honest with you, they have announced and retracted so many things, whether it be parks or Disney Plus,
right,
that I don't even remember. I've lost track.
I wasn't sure if that was the case either. If it was announced a while ago, it was on the back burner, they released it. The only thing that I remember from Star Wars in recent history is how much, you know, obviously they announced Ahsoka. Everybody went nuts for that. And they were pushing that for a really long time. But I really don't recall if this was a surprise or not. But I mean, trailer looks good. It'll be interesting to see where this falls in the timeline, I think, because I'm not sure if it's picking up after Rise of Skywalker seeing the younglings, or you had said this could be the bridge between...
I don't know if it's between episodes 3 and 4. I don't know. I don't know. And frankly, I don't like to do a ton of research into this, not out of laziness, but I like surprises. I like nothing to be spoiled. And this is interesting enough to me, at least the trailer looks good enough, where I don't want anything to be spoiled.
Agreed.
All right. D23 Expo coming up this summer, and some big names announced.
Yes, lots of news on the D23 front. So the Legends panel is going to be on Sunday, August 11th. I believe that's the last day of the expo, at the Honda Center, hosted by Ryan Seacrest. This year, they are inducting, there's a lot, so I'll go through some of the highlights. Colleen Atwood, who's a costume designer, I was really excited to see that. Angela Bassett, for film and television, obviously, Yes Please.
Yeah.
Wakanda Forever, and for everything that she's done with her voiceovers and the Imagineer story, like, this should have happened a while ago. Lots of... talent from ABC. We've got James Cameron being inducted. I mean, obviously with the Avatar partnership, that's given. Jamie Lee Curtis, Miley Cyrus. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it makes sense. I think it makes sense for all parties involved. She's obvious. I mean, look, she's become a global megastar. She got her start with Disney. And she separated herself from Disney for a long time. And it seemed like Disney wanted to separate themselves from her. But at this point, I think her star power is big enough where it makes sense to make her a Disney legend. I think when you look at some of the names on the list of people that are being inducted this year, I do believe that there's a certain level of, well, why did it take this person so long and Miley Cyrus is in now? It's not that she doesn't deserve it, but when you name off a few more of the legends, I feel like it would have been okay if she would have waited just a little bit longer.
That's a good point. I like it for her and that she's had the opportunity to come full circle, but when you put it up against somebody like, oh, I don't know, Harrison Ford, who is also being inducted, it's sort of like, how did Indy take so long to get in there? For animation, Mark Henn. Again, Frank Oz, long overdue. Kelly Ripa, do what you will with that. Joe Rohde, obviously.
Yeah.
And John Williams.
So many names. Maybe almost too many names. It seems like a lot.
Well, I think that that's why they're having it in such a big... venue, which is also something that I wanted to talk about, because I've been hearing rumblings that this is taking place in multiple venues, the Honda Center being one of them. Then you've got the convention itself. And they also announced that they're going to do a great big beautiful car show with some, I believe they're going to be cars from the films and some ride vehicles. And I'm wondering if they're going to do that on the studio lot. I would guess if you've got them in the archives and you're pulling them out, some of this stuff, it's got to be on the studio. But my big question is, how are you getting from point A to point B? I don't know if there's going to be a shuttle provided. I doubt it.
I don't see how it's possible.
And I feel like if you are attending... you know, you're just going to have to budget your time very wisely, because there's a lot of moving parts here.
Well, I can tell you what I think it is. I think this is way too spread out. I don't think you can have a con where you're in multiple buildings spread over an entire city. So I think that it's way too many. I think that they're looking at this as an opportunity to crowd control. I think they're looking at this as an opportunity to oversell the event. Because if you have this panel inside the convention center, you're bringing so many people into the convention center that it almost becomes unfeasible.
Mm-hmm.
By taking 20,000 people out, first off, you just sold 20,000 tickets to another event, and you're moving them to a different place, that gives you an opportunity to sell 20,000 seats at the Honda Center, still sell 20,000 people inside the convention center. So you've brought in 40,000 more, but you've spread them out over two locations.
No, and honestly, this is why we're not D23 members anymore, because this is supposed to be a fan membership. And the D23 Expo is, quote unquote, the ultimate fan event. So now you've made it so the fans are going to have to not only pick and choose what they want to do, but there are things that they are just straight up not going to be able to experience. And if you're selling that many tickets, likely to people who are not members, the members aren't going to get to experience it.
Well, the other thing it does, it handcuffs you into buying the entire weekend,
right,
instead of a one-day ticket.
Right. Yeah, it's just getting too big. And I mean, that's the thing. It's nice to see that it's grown and that this is such a highly anticipated event for the Disney community as a whole, because even if you're not going, everybody's obviously going to be tuning in to see all of these panels and announcements. But I think we're sort of losing the plot here as far as what this started out as, so that the fans could experience it in one weekend and get to experience everything.
Moving on to something else that's highly anticipated and has a lot of people talking right now. The theming for the next Disney cruise ship has been unveiled. One of the next cruise ships, at least. The Disney Destiny. They had a video with some animation with Minnie Mouse. It's going to be hero and villain themed. I actually think that this is a really nice theme for the ship.
I do too. And I think that that's going to be really cool, because you'll probably see a lot more Marvel Days at Sea with something like this. And it is one of the larger ships. I believe the class is the same as the Wish and the Treasure.
I believe that you are right. And that's going to be setting sail next year.
But if you don't want to wait, you can email me now and we will get you booked on a cruise.
And if you're not interested in going on a cruise, but you want to come to Walt Disney World, we're finally going to see the end of construction at Epcot.
Oh, I'm so excited.
You have no idea how much this brings joy to my heart. Communicore Plaza is going to be opening this summer, and they have announced a couple of events that'll be happening there. There's going to be a new meet and greet for Mickey and friends. I think that makes a lot of sense. We know that obviously it's going to be headquarters for festivals moving forward, and according to Disney Parks blog, more on that later. How is that different from anything that we've heard recently? But no, there is a part-time show coming to the Communicore Plaza stage called Celebración. Yeah, I'm not Spanish. Celebración Encanto. Okay, it's the best I can give you. It's going to be a short-term show, which I'm sort of interested in, because it's going to run from June 10th through September 6th. And I'm surprised that something that is as viable as Encanto is something that you would be bringing in short-term. What that tells me is that they probably have one of two things. They're either going to be doing seasonal shows that'll rotate throughout the year there, or they have something that they want to put in long-term, but they're not ready yet, and they're slapping Encanto on something just to give you filler for the summer. But I think that it makes sense to put Encanto there.
I would agree. Yeah, the timing doesn't really make sense, because if this is supposed to be for festivals, you're having an overlap between the end of Flower and Garden and the beginning of Food and Wine.
Correct.
So I tend to agree with you that it may not be what this building is intended for, may not officially be ready to go. But as far as the IP that they chose for now, I think that's a really smart use of the space, because, you know, kids are still never going to get tired of singing We Don't Talk About Bruno. So if they're doing, you know, a type of sing-along, I think that's going to be really great for kids. And I think it's also a smart use of Epcot as a whole, because now that you've got Moana up at the front as well, it kind of seems like they're trying to pull families towards the front of the park and maybe out of the hoopla that sometimes goes on in the back. I mean, yes, you've still got Remy's Ratatouille Adventure. You've still got Frozen. But I'm wondering if they're trying to force more of a kid-friendly area up at the front.
I'm fine with that.
I am too, but like it's also not just, you know, I don't want to sound like the childless millennial of, you know, get out of my space, because kids and families should be experiencing, they should be able to experience all of the culture and everything else, the food that the pavilions have to offer, even if they're not of drinking age. What they shouldn't have to be experiencing is people, you know, sitting in fountains and overindulging in drinks. So I think this is kind of a good move if you have younger kids and you need to get them out of there.
Yeah, well, we are interested in hearing your take on any of this Disney news. You can let us know on all major social media platforms at Monoreal Radio, or you can email us monorealradio@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for joining us this and every week on Monoreal Radio. Monoreal Radio will always be free, but there are many ways that you can help support the show. Please give us a rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. Join the conversation on social media at Monoreal Radio on all major platforms. Share your favorite episodes with family and friends who may enjoy them. And of course, book your next trip with Jackie. Links to everything can be found at monorealradio.com. We all have one story. Make yours a magical one.
On behalf of Monoreal Radio, we'd like to thank you for joining us. We'll see you at the movies, the stuff dreams are made of.